All right, we're beginning here 9 lines down at the top of Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara over here is questioning the beginning of the Braita, the Tanakhama's view. We brought the Braita to find out or understand why Rabbi Shimon believes that you take off a kometz from a Minchat Kohen and then a Makriv, the whole thing on the Mizbeach. But the Tanakhama had a different approach, which was, Vital the Kohen ke Mincha, Shetei Avodotok Sherabbo. That's what the proposition of the Tanakhama was from that Pasuk Vital Kohen Kemincha. And then it says, Ata Omer, and gives other alternatives. But when the Braita gives you the first alternative, it's telling you what it wants to get to in the conclusion. Then it offers you the other options, and then comes back to that conclusion. The conclusion, or what the Tanakhama used the Pasuk for, was to teach us a Kohen can bring his own Minchat Choteh. So that a Kohen doesn't have to get another Kohen to bring his Minchat Choteh, he can bring it himself. And the Gemara asks about that. Hashatei Avodotok Sherabo, the fact that the Avodah is shared with him. Me'ocho Nafko? We learn it out of the Pasuk of Vaital HaKohen Kamincha, which is written by the Minchat Choteh. Me'atam Nafko, we learn it from here. Me'nayin LeKohen Sheba U'makriv Korbanotav B'cholet U'b'chol Sha'ash Yirtzeh. How do we know that a Kohen can come up to the Mikdash and bring his korbanot whenever he chooses? Tamar lomar, uva b'chol avat nafsho v'sheret. He can come as he pleases and do the avoda in the mikdash. Now, Kohanim divided up the avodah in the mikdash into 24 mishmarot, and each mishmar has its own week over a 24-week period, and then they cycle again through the 24 mishmarot. So this individual is coming up not on his mishmar, he's coming up whenever he feels like it. So the possibility would have been that he was precluded from doing avoda in a week that didn't belong to his mishmar. So what we see from the pasuk here is b'chol avot nafsho b'sheret. If he wants to come up and do his avoda, that is his choice. He can do it. So that's for his own personal korbanot. There might be even for korbanot yachid, another Yisrael who wants a particular kohen could do it. He might be able to do it for him. The mishmar or the division by the mishmar was only about korbanot tzibur or things that are not necessarily about individuals, but about the avoda and the mikdash on the daily basis that the tzibur does it for all of Klal Yisrael. So here he has a right to come up and do the avoda. It says, "Ima atam hava amina." Had I only had that, I would have thought, "Hani mile davar shein balachet." That is, if there's no sin involved. Aval davar shein balachet, eim alo. Something comes for a sin, maybe not. The idea would be akin to what we say in the Gemara in Brachot, the ein chavush matir atzom mi beit asurim, that someone who's incarcerated can't free himself from jail. You need someone from the outside to release them from jail. You can't release yourself from jail. The Gemara in Brachot uses that with regards to an individual who has isurim and needs someone else to daven on their behalf. So even though the person themselves is of a stature where they could daven for others, but when it comes to themselves, sometimes you need a third party. You need an outside party to release you. And similarly over here, he did the sin. It would be both from the perspective you need maybe someone else to provide the kapara, as well as the fact that you sinned, and therefore maybe you are disqualified from bringing the korban here. You need to have the tshuva in order to continue doing the avoda. That's why maybe you would think you need a third party. The Gemara says, "V'hanami mehocha nafko." That also you learn out from that pasuk, "V'haita lakohen kamincha." Mehatam nafko. We can learn it out from this pasuk. It says, "V'chiper hakohen ala nefesh ha-shogeget, b'chat'a bishkaga lifnei Hashem, l'chaper ala v'nislach lo." Milamed. Shokwein mitkaper ayudei atzmo. So from this pasuk in Parshat Shlach, we learn, so it's v'chiper hakohen ala nefesh. Nefesh could mean his own nefesh. Rashi over here says, well, it says v'chiper hakohen ala nefesh ha-shogeget. The word nefesh over there means afilu al nafsho shel atzmo. Even on his own nefesh that he can bring the chatat. The Rabbeinu Gershom says something similar, and that's the one way to interpret it. Whereas the Rashi in the Tav Yad says it has to do with the duplication in the pasuk. Well, why do you need b'chetah b'shkagah? You just told me it was a nefesh ha-shogeget. So that's the limud here, is the duplication of the shkagah to tell you that even for shkagat atzmo, he can bring a korban. And over there we're speaking about a korban chatat for avodah zarah. So either it comes out of the word nefesh, or out of the duplication between v'chiper hakohen ala nefesh shoget and then b'chata b'shkaga. So where it says, "Imi yahu, hava amino, hane mile b'shogeg." That's only if it was unintentional. Aval b'mezid, when it's intentional, lo, maybe that would not be the case. It's one thing to be unintentional and then be able to gain kapara through your own bringing of the korban. But if you do it intentionally, that already makes you a rasha. It really disqualifies you because you did it b'mezid. Kamash v'lan, that even b'mezid has a right to bring a korban. Now that's a little difficult because in general, korbanot only come bishkaga, when a person does something bishogeg, unintentionally. You don't usually bring a korban for something that's done b'mezid intentionally. So that's what Gemara says, b'mezid, eicha mishkachado. Where do you have a situation in which the kohen is in violation of something b'mezid, and he brings a korban? The answer to that is something that you might remember from a little while back, that when it comes to the korban olev v'yoreid, that is in Vayikra Hey, there are a number of items that are mentioned there. Shvat Ha'idut, Shvat Bitoy, Tumat Mikdash, V'Kodoshav. So those are the three items that are mentioned there. Out of those three items, when we discussed it, one of them is actually, even if you violate it, B'mezid, you still bring the Korban. And that's what the Gemara says, B'zadon Shvua. It's a case where he took the Shvua intentionally, and what it's referencing to here is the Shvat Ha'idut. By Shvat Ha'idut, whether you do it Bishkaga or B'mezid, you still bring the Korban Olevi Oreid. So there you have a situation in which you have a Korban that is brought over a violation B'mezid. And what it's saying here is that Vaitala Kohen Kamincha, the Braita is teaching us that the Kohen here will service this Mincha like he would service any other Mincha, which means that the Minchat Choteh, or that Chatat that is being brought over here, the Kohen has a right to service, even though it's B'mezid. So we actually have three sources for the fact that a Kohen can bring his own Korban. One which is about voluntary Korbanot. And there we have B'b'chol Avot Nafsho, whenever he feels like it, he can come up and serve in the Mikdash. We have one for violations B'shogeg, which is the Pasuk in Pashat Shlach. We compare a Kohen ala Nefesh HaShogeget, the Chet'a B'shgaga. And then the third limud is for when he violates B'mezid and has to bring a Korban, that he's still allowed to bring his own Korban in that case. And that we learn out from Vaitala Kohen Kamincha. That's the brayta that we brought in order to explain the position of Rabbi Shimon. This is the Tanakam or the Chachamim's view neged Rabbi Shimon. Tanya Idach. We have another brayta. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Minchat Chuteh Shel Kohanim Nikmetzet, Vakometz Karev Bifnei Atzmo, Vashirayim Karevim Bifnei Atzman. So Rabbi Shimon says that when it comes to Minchat Chuteh of Kohanim, you take off a kometz. The kometz goes on the mizbeach by itself, and the shiraim go on by itself. Belazer Rabbi Shimon Omer, a kometz karev be'atzmo, the kometz goes on by itself, but shiraim mitpazrim al beta dashin. And the shiraim, the residual, goes on the beta dashin. Amar Rabbi Chir ba'ava, havi ba Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan wondered, or questioned, beta dashin dehecha. What exactly is the beta dashin that we're speaking about here? Because he's arguing on his father in terms of where the shiraim go, and the question is, how is that differentiated from his father? If we're speaking about the Beit HaDeshen up above, Hainu Avua, that's exactly the same as his father. Up above would mean to place it on the Deshen, the ashes that are on the Mizbeach. The ashes were piled up at the center of the Mizbeach into what's called the Tapuach, which was a big mound of the ashes that were there, from which the Trumat HaDeshen was taken from, as well as the Hotzat HaDeshen was done from the Tapuach. According to Rabbi Yochanan over here, had it been that the Beit HaDeshen that Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon was referencing to is the Tapuach, that's exactly what Rabbi Shimon himself says. Now, if you look at Rabbi Shimon, it's not clear that he says that. Rabbi Shimon says that you take off a kometz, and then that kometz is put on the Mizbeach by itself, and the Shiraim are Krevim Bifnei Atzman. It could be that Rabbi Shimon is saying, put the kometz on the maracha, on the pyre, and then put the shiraim on the pyre. If that's the case, then he's differentiated from his son. It could be that he puts it on the pyre, and his son is saying, put it on the Beit HaDeshen, put it on the tapuach, on the mound in the middle. How do you know that they are actually not arguing about that? So if you look in the Shita Mekubetzet Od Hei, he says, Im Tomar, the shiraim, that's the difference. The yesh lomar, the bifnei atzman, mashma shelo b'makom ha-maracha, v'haynu tapuach. So what the Shita Mikubetzet says is the fact that Rabbi Shimon divides up the Hakrava of the Kometz and the Shirayim indicates to you that their Hakravot must be different. Because if it was not for the fact that you had to put the Kometz in one place and the Shirayim in another place, then he should have just said, put the Kometz and the Shirayim on the Mizbeach. Once you remove the Kometz, if they both require Haktara, you can put them on the Mizbeach together, Behaktara. Why do you have to separate the action of Haktara of the Kometz from the Shirayim? We have that by the Kometz and the Levona. You take them and you put them on the Mizbeach together, at least according to one day, that they go in a single kli, then they go on the Mizbeach Haktara Achat. So why over here would he separate the Haktarot? So the Shita Mikubetzet says that's evidence of the fact that the Akrava of the Kometz is different than the Akrava of the Shirayim. So if the Akrava of the Kometz is on the Maracha, that means the Akrava of the Shirayim must be on the Tapuach. But then he asks about that. How could it be that he puts it on the Tapuach if that is Makom Adeshen? If that's a place where there's ashes and there's no Maracha? The idea of Haktara is to put it into a pyre so that it burns. But if you're putting it onto a pile of ashes, why does that help you? So he answers, V'tzarech lomar, that the tapuach is made up of hot ashes that still have live coals inside of them. Since they have live coals, it's still considered to be a haktara of sorts. And so that's how he gets around the problem of haktara. So there is hakravar, haktara on the mizbeach, even when you put on the tapuach. But it has to be distinct from the kometz. Otherwise, why did Rabbi Shimon distinguish between Kometz and Shirayim in terms of Haktara? You understand why he separated them up front, because you need to take off a Kometz. But once a Kometz is removed, they should be able to be put on the Mizbeach together. The fact that he says two different Akravot show you that it must be a difference in the Akravot. That's the case. If Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon believed that Beit HaDeshen meant the Tapuach, then he's saying the exact same thing as his father. Idilamato. So the other option is that it's talking about the Beit HaDeshen down below. Yesh lecha davar shekarev lamato? Since when is there something that is mukrav, that has haktara lamato? Now as far as the mato is concerned, it's not clear what that means. There are a number of areas associated with the deshen. There first of all is what's called the makoma deshen. Makoma deshen is a place just east of the ramp up to the mizbeach, in which they put the trumat deshen every day. That's where they put the Mora'ah and the Notzatah of the Olat Ha'Of. It was a place that was designated for the placement of certain, quote-unquote, waste materials or items that were taken off the Mizbeach. And according to Rashi, they miraculously disappeared in their place. It was swallowed up in location. That might be what we're referring to here, the Mata, which is Makom HaDeshen, rather than Beit HaDeshen. And that you can see in the Rashi, where he says, Beit HaDeshen to the Mato, B'makom shemashlich mora'ah b'notza'ah, b'turum at HaDeshen etzel HaKevesh. And Rashi Ketav Yad says the same thing, Ito the Mato, al shefer HaDeshen b'azara, in the placement where the Deshen goes in the Azara. So he seems to be speaking about the same location. The Bali and Tosafot have a different version of Rashi. It might be that the word b'azara is missing. Ours have it in brackets over here in the Ketav Yad. Might have been that Tosfot did not have the word Bazara there, and therefore it read Al Shefech HaDeshen. And that's because there are additional locations called Beit HaDeshen. Beit HaDeshen is where you burn things that either have to be Nisrafim or things that are Psulim. There are actually three Batei Deshen. There's a Beit HaDeshen in the Azara itself, a place where they burnt things that became Psulim in the Azara. There's also a Beit HaDeshen on Har HaBayit, which is if the Parim and Nisrafim or Sirim and Nisrafim become Psulim, once they've left the Azara, they're burnt there on Har HaBayit. And there's a Beit HaDeshen on Har HaMishcha, out where they used to take the Parim and Nisrafim and Sirim and Nisrafim, where they have to be burnt. That's a third Beit HaDeshen. So the question here, again, would be then, what's the reference of Beit HaDeshen? In all likelihood, it's somewhere in the Azara. So Rashi claims it's the Makom HaDeshen, where they put the Trumat HaDeshen and the Mora'ah and the Notzah of the Kurban Olat Ha'Of. But Tosafot says, Perish HaKuntris, Al Shefer HaDeshen Bachutz, outside. So he seems to think that Rashi was speaking about a Shefer HaDeshen, not in the Azara, but the one on Har HaBayit, or maybe even the one on Har HaMishcha. It's not clear here. The Kasha, Dim Kem Rabbi Nifsel Beyotze. Then what type of Hakrava? Forget about Hakrava. You took it out of the Azara. It's already Pasul Yotze. El nira ba'azara ba'makom shesham parim usirim nisrafim. It's reference to the place in the azara where they burn the parim nisrafim, usirim nisrafim, if they become sulim. So that is a different location than the shefach hadeshen. It's the beit hadeshen that's found in the azara. And Tosfos claims that's where they burnt it. He says, Rabbeinu Tam Mefereish, b'makom sheminichim tumat hadeshen etzel hakeves. And the Rabbeinu Tam says, what we have in our Rashi, is that it was the makom hadeshen etzel hakeves, v'lo yitachein. He says, you can't do that. The tumat hadeshen kodem tamid haya. V'achar tamid hayu makrivim korbanot u'mnachot, v'az kvar nitztanein. He says, the tumat hadeshen was taken off the first avoda in the Mikdash. So the coals, or the ashes that are placed there next to the kevesh, by the time you got to any korbanot in the Mikdash, the Shefach HaDeshen already burnt out. It was cool already. So you're not being makriv anything over there. You're not going to be maktir anything over there. There's nothing hot to put on over there. So he rejects this view that it was the Shefach HaDeshen because he just says there's not enough hot coals there to make it that it is hakrava. And that's why Tosafot favors saying that it's the Beit HaDeshen that is in the Azara. So the Gemara says, if it's the Beit HaDeshen, the Mala, he's saying the same thing as father, so then why is there an argument in the Braita? If he says the Beit HaDeshen down below, then how come you have something that's Karev Lamata? We don't have any concept anywhere else where there's Hakrava that is not done on the Mizbeach itself. All of a sudden you're introducing this new concept of Hakrava that's either according to the Rashi in the Makom HaDeshen or the Beit HaDeshen according to the Baal Tosafot. We never find such a precedent. It says, Amalei Rabbi Abba, Demoli Ibud. Maybe when he says that you put it on there, he's saying that you destroy it. You're getting rid of it. Gemara says, Achiku Alei. They laughed about that suggestion. The inconsistency here is that we have two different concepts. We have one concept called Hakrava, which is associated with Mizbeach itself. We have another concept called Le'abed, to destroy something, to get rid of something. That is burnt, but that's not hakrava. That's when you're commanded to rid yourself of something, whether it's a psul, whether it's something that's tamei, or whether it's something that the korban itself requires that you burn a portion of it outside of the mikdash, but that's to rid yourself of it. That's not to do hakrava. What you're suggesting over here, Rabbi Abba, is that you're going to have a hakrava li'ibud. That doesn't really make sense. Hakrava is not li'ibud. Yes, it's li'ibud because it goes on the mizbeach, but it's not to be destroyed. And hakrava implies something being granted or given to Hashem. And ibud means something that is disqualified, something that is being removed because it's not being given to Hashem and not being placed on a mizbeach. So that's why they laughed at him, Darasha Krav li'ibud. So now the Gemara goes on and says, Tani Avua de Rabbi Avin. So we have a braita from the father Rabbi Avin. Rashi gives two explanations over here. Rashi, first of all, says, non sequitur. He says, Tani Avua, Memra Bifnei Atzmo. It's a totally new sugya. We're leaving behind this first sugya, and now we're moving on to something else completely new. Then Rashi brings a second interpretation. He says, Inyan Archer, Mori Rabbi Zal, V'chi Yesh L'davar Shekarev Li'ibuah. Do you ever have something that is karev in a destructive way? Tani avod Rabbi Avin, Olam mitpazeret beit hadeshen milamato. The answer to that question is yes. I have a case, and that's what Tani avod Rabbi Avin is bringing, because it says here, kol minchat kohen kalil tiyeh lo te'achel. So that's the pasuk that's found by the end of the parshia of the minchat chavitin. And it says there, that's how we know that any minchat kohen has to be kalil tiyeh, totally placed on the mizbeach. Lo te'achel, it may not be eaten. La'achila hikashtia, velo ledavar echer. There is a hekesh for achila and for nothing else. Now, Gemara will ask, what does this mean? But before we say, what does this mean, what is the hekesh that's going on? So Rashi over here claims that the hekesh that we have here is minchat chotesh shel kol anim leminchat nidvato. Their hekesh is between the minchat chotesh of the kohen and the minchat nidava of the kohen. Rashi in the Ktav Yad actually gives a different hekesh, and he says here, minchat kohen lechavitin. The minchat kohen to the chavitin, which is the parshia right beforehand. And Tosafot says something similar. Deit kish minchat chote lachavitin. Inyan achila, lo inyan harkrava. Vizeh the ibud, vizeh the kalil. So either it is that the minchat kotez compared to the minchat nidava of the kohen, but it's only a hekesh lachila, which means that both of them are not eaten, but you're going to treat them differently. The minchat nidava is kalil on the mizbeach, whereas the minchat kotez is not kalil on the mizbeach, because this is like Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, who says that only a portion of it goes on the mizbeach, but the other half goes to the Beit HaDeshen. Or, if you think the hekesh is between the Minchat Choteh to the Minchat Chavitin, similarly, both the Minchat Chavitin is Kalil HaMizbeach, but the Lo Te'achel aspect, the fact that you don't eat them, they're both similar, the Minchat Choteh, the Kohen, and the Minchat Chavitin. But the great Gabe HaKrava, they're different. The Minchat Chavitin goes Kalil, whereas the Minchat Choteh of the Kohen goes to the Beit HaDeshen, like Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. So Gemara asks, Maika Amar, what is meant by this? And therefore now, the question of the Gemara, according to Rashi, that we're speaking about a Minchat Nedava and a Minchat Chova, is, where do you see Minchat Nedava and Chova in the Pasuk? And that's what we're about to explain. And you can see that in Rashi, who says that the Hekesh is between Minchat Choteh, the Minchat Nedava, he says, Maika Amar means, Hei Cheshmaina Mihaikra Chovato O Nidvato. On the other hand, Tosafot, who says that the hekesh is between Minchat Choteh lechavitin, he says the meaning of Maika Amar is Da Kalil Nami Ktibe, Amala Kalil Nami Uksha. The fact that you compare the chavitin to the Minchat Choteh, the word Kalil appears here in the Pasuk, and so then why isn't the Kalil a part of this hekesh between the Minchat Chavitin and the Minchat Choteh of the Kohen? How do you know it's only about Achila and not about the Kalil aspect of it? Because the word Kalil is mentioned in the Pasuk. And that's what the answer of the Gemara now comes to tell you, that the Pasuk is dealing with two different Minachot, and the Kalil Tiyeh is not a reference to the Minchat Chova. Amar Abayi, Hachi Ka Amar. This is what's meant by this. He's going to cut up the Pasuk a little bit. It says, Ko Minchat Kohen, Lo Te'achel. Any Minchat Kohen shall not be eaten, Chovoto. That's a reference to his obligatory Minachot, which is his Minchat Choteh. Kalil Tiyah, that is Nidvato. That is his Korban Mincha that's brought mid Nidava. So he's saying here that the Minchat Kohen, Kalil Tiyah, reference to different Minachot. Chol Minchat Kohen is a reference to the Minchat Chova, and there it says, Lo Te'achel, you may not eat it. And then you have for the Minchat Nidava, Kalil Tiyah. Amalei Rova, Sakina Harifa Mifsaka Krai? You got a sharp knife to cut up sukkim like that. How do you mix up a pasuk? The pasuk started, Chol Minchat Kohen, Kalil Tiyeh, Lo Te'achel. You slice it up and read, Chol Minchat Kohen, Lo Te'achel. And then you say the other part is Kalil Tiyeh. How do you move the Kalil Tiyeh out and separate it out? El Omer Ovo, Chol Minchat Kohen, Kalil Tiyeh. So the beginning of the pasuk, which is Kol Minchat Kohen Kalil Tiyeh, is reference to Nidvato, the Minchat Nidava of the Kohen. Lo Te'achel is a reference to Chovato, the Minchat Choteh of the Kohen. So first of all, if you think that this is an independent statement, then it has nothing to do with the previous sugya, and it's just describing to us the process by which we deal with the Minchat Nidava and the Minchat Chova of a Kohen. What is the Kalil that is required in each of these cases? And then what are the restrictions involved? That we'll continue to explain here. If you believe that this is an answer to the previous question, do we ever find something that's Karev Li'ibud, then this is explaining that there are two different instructions with regards to the Minachot of the Kohen, which is that Itkesh Minchat Choteh L'Chavitin Li'inyan Achila, that there is a parallel between the Minchat Choteh and the Chavitin in terms of eating it, below the Hakrava, but not about its Hakrava. Shezeh li'ibud, vezeh kalil. That the Minchat Chavitin goes on Mizbeach kalil, whereas the Minchat Choteh goes li'ibud. And therefore he says, now I have a paradigm where you see that there's a Hakrava that goes li'ibud. And so that would be the answer to the question before. Is there such a precedent? The answer would be yes. There is such a case. We do have a situation which is true. That's the first thing. Second thing is, Abaye and Rava are arguing But it's not exactly clear what they're arguing about. In the end, Rava says that it's a reference to a minchat nedava and a minchat chova. And Abaye says the same thing, but he just cuts up the pasuk a little differently. So then what's the nafkamina? What's the difference between their understandings? So the Shita Mikubetzet in Ot Zion says, "Benirli shadata Talmud ta'kra devechol minchat kohen kaya kra dela'el demayri bechova sheichavitin hi chova." The machloke between Rava and Abaye has to do with the designation of the parts of the pasuk to either a minchat chova or a minchat nedava. What Abaye says is, kol minchat kohen lo ta'achel refers to chova, kalil tiyeh refers to nedava. That is what you would have naturally done, which is that whenever the pasuk speaks about something, you would expect it to speak about the obligatory offering, and then speak about the voluntary offering. So that's what Abaye does. He says the first part of the pasuk is speaking about chova, the latter half of the pasuk is speaking about a nedava. Rava doesn't like the way he cut up the pasuk, and Rava comes along and says, kol minchat kalil tiyeh is nedava, lo te'achel is chova. So he flips it and puts the chova in the back end. In doing so, then he goes against the grain of what you would have thought the psukim are speaking about. It's in the context of minchat chavitin that this pasuk is said about the kohen's mincha. And therefore, you see that the basic thing that it's speaking about is a korban chova. If that's the case, the chova should have gone first. So then why does Rava flip them around? So therefore, according to the Shita Mikubetzet, there's no real fundamental difference between their opinions. The difference really lies in the interpretation, whether you favor putting chova first and then nedava to have it parallel with the minchat chavitin that comes before it. That's a Abaye's view. Or do you give priority to keep the pasuk intact versus putting the chova before the nedava? And that's Rava's view, to put the nedava before the chova, even though that doesn't necessarily parallel as well with the continuation from the minchat chavitin. And that leads to the Gemara's next question, which is, ipuch ano. Why don't you flip them around? So now, according to that view in the Shita Mikubetzet, this question is solely on Rava, because Abaye makes sense. He puts the chova before the nedava. Rava, who flips it and puts the nedava before the chova, the Gemara says about that, the ipuch ano. Why don't you flip them around? On the other hand, whereas according to the Bali and Tosafot, the question is on both Abaye and Rava. You can see that in Tosafot he says, "Vatarvayu porich v'ipuch ano," that the question here being asked on both of them is ipuch ano, because according to him, the answer that it's dealing with a chova and a nedava is actually the answer to why the kalil tiyeh does not apply to a minchat chuteh of the kohen. And the Gemara wants to know ipuch ano, because if you flip it around, it will have application by the minchat chuteh of the kohen. So the question then would be, according to both the Rashita of Rashi and the Rashita of the Bali and Tosafot, is if you were to switch around the minchat chova and the minchat nedava, according to Rashi, it's just a simple question of why did you pick chova versus nedava, because then you would get a different outcome over here, because that's what's explaining the difference between a minchat nedava and a minchat chova. Or for the Bali and Tosafot, if you flipped them around, then the hekesh to the chavitin would be different. And if you flip them around, then the hekesh would be about the kalil and not about the achila. So then the Gemara asks, ipuch ano, why don't you flip them around? Because then you'll come to a different conclusion. Mistavra nidvato avile de ribuye. The reason that it includes nidava, shekain, these are the properties of nidava, tadira, it comes frequently. You can bring it as often as you like, even daily, similar to the minchat chavitin. Lo chate, it is something that is not about a chait. Minchat chavidim and a minchat nedava have nothing to do with sinning. And basim rechei, the other thing that's common between them is that they have a pleasant smell. Rashi brings two possibilities as to what that means. The second one is, they both have reach nichoach written by them, whereas the minchat choteh does not have reach nichoach written by it, for good reason. That's brought on a chait, so that's not a reach nichoach. Something that's brought voluntarily, that's a reach nichoach l'Hashem. He brings another interpretation, which the Bali Tosafot favor heavily, because they say, if you believe that it's about reach nichoach, then the other reason that Rashi brings is missing and should have been there. And so the other one is basim rechei, is that literally, it has a nice smell to it. And that's because a minchat nidava, a minchat chavitim, come with shemen and levona. And that would make it literally smell nice, as opposed to a minchat choteh, which is a minchat chareva, which would not be pleasant smelling. So that's the way Rashi brings. And the first interpretation in Tosfot favors that, because if you just say it's riach nicholach, then levona and shemen should have been a distinction that's mentioned, and it's absent here. So you have three reasons to be hekesh between a nidava and a chavitim, where it says, adraba, chovatav, elei de ribuye, makes more sense to parallel the chovah with the minchat chavitim, shekein, because the common between them is an isaron. Both the minchat chavitim and the minchat chovah come from an isaron, a single isaron, whereas a minchat nedava, you can bring any amount of isronot that you choose. Chovah, both the minchat chavitim and the minchat choteh are obligatory offerings, whereas the minchat nedava, by definition, is a voluntary offering. Hanach nefishan, those are more numerous. So there are more reasons to correlate the minchat nedava with the minchat chavitim than there are to correlate the minchat chuvah with the minchat chavitim, which would then favor Tosafot's view that the ekesh here was ekesh between the minchat nedava and the minchat chavitim. But for Rashi, it just simply explains that why you would give the kalil tiyeh to the minchat nedava versus the lo te'achel to the minchat chuvah, because it makes more sense that the nedava should have the kalil tiyeh, which is apparent by the minchat chavitim of a kalil taktar, because of the commonalities between them. And therefore, you do something different with the shirayim of the minchat choteh than you do with the minchat chavitim. The minchat chavitim goes entirely on the pyre. The minchat chuvah, depending on what you think Beit HaDeshen is for Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, will determine what you do or how it's differentiated. And again, if it goes, quote-unquote, li'ibud, then you would have precedence for this idea that you can have akrava li'ibud. All right, so now the Gemara says, Rabbanan, hai ko minchat kohen kalil tiyeh, lo te'achel, mayavdile. So the Rabbanan, what do they do with this pasuk of ko minchat kohen kalil tiyeh, lo te'achel? There could two possibilities as to who the Rabbanan who we're discussing over here are. Either it could be the Rabbanan de Pelig Alei de Rabbi Shimon, the Rabbanan that argued in Rabbi Shimon, the Amar Minchat Choteh Shukonim Kaliohi, goes entirely on Mizbeach. What do they do with this Pasuk? Or, Tosfot says that Rabbanan are, Hainu Ben Rabbanan, Ben Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbanan over here is a reference to both the Rabbanan who argue on Rabbi Shimon, as well as Rabbi Shimon himself, who argues on his son, Rabbi Elazar by Rabbi Shimon. Because until now, we've been discussing this view of Rabbi Elazar by Rabbi Shimon. So are the Rabbanan simply the Rabbanan that argue on Rabbi Shimon? Or is the Rabbanan subsumed within it, also Rabbi Shimon himself, who argues on his son? And that's what the reference of Rabbanan is over here. Rabbanan, haiko minchat kohen kalil tiyeh lo te'achel maya avdilei, mi bailu l'kedetanyo. They need it for this braita. Ainly alel yona bikalio taktar b'tachtona below teachel. There are two psukim in a row. We've discussed this earlier in the Masechta that the last pasuk of the Minchat Chavitin is b'kohen haMashiach taktav b'banav yaseh uto achak olam laHashem kalio taktar. So that's the requirement of what you do with the Minchat Chavitin. Then you have a subsequent pasuk that says b'chol Minchat kohen kalio tiyeh lo teachel. The El Yonah, the first pasuk has the words Kalil Taktar, which tells you that it's put on the Mizbeach in its entirety. The latter pasuk has Lo Te'achel, but it doesn't have what you do with the Kalil. Now, even though the word Kalil Tiyed does appear in that latter pasuk, the Sfatim Met makes a claim that that Kalil Tiyed is different than Kalil Taktar. Kalil Taktar clearly indicates that you put it entirely on the Mizbeach as a Haktarah. Kalil Tiyeh just means that it has to be totally something. And that might be totally wiped out, or totally eliminated. Or it could imply that you don't have to put it on altogether. Kalil Tiyeh, it just has to be put on, but maybe you have to take off a komets before you put it on the Mizbeach. And therefore we don't know what the Kalil Tiyeh means. So the Mayin Liten et Amur Shalzeh Bezeh, et Amur Shalzeh Bezeh. How do I know to apply the Lo Te'achel in the latter pasuk to the Minchat Chavitim, which is in the earlier pasuk? And how do I know to apply the Kalil Taktar from the Minchat Chavitim to the latter pasuk that says Kalil Tiyeh Lo Te'achel? Tamar Lomar, Kalil, Kalil. Both psukim have the word Kalil in it. Gezerah Shavah. Nemar kan kalil, but nemar lahalan kalil. Says kalil by the chavitin, it says kalil by the minchat kohen. Malahalan bikalil taktar. Just like by the case of the minchat chavitin, it's a kalil taktar. It's put on the mizbeach in its entirety. Afkan bikalil taktar. So to over here, by the minchat kohen, it also goes kalil entirely on the mizbeach. Umakan litain lota seachilato. Just like by the minchat kohen, there's a restriction against eating it. Afahalan. So too, by the case of the minchat chavitin, litain lota se al achilato. To tell you that there should be a lota se on the consumption of it, that lota yachel applies. Now the Gemara says, by Ravina, kohen sheachal mina imurim, mahu. What's the din of a kohen who eats from the imurim? Now the imurim are supposed to go on the mizbeach. They're not supposed to be eaten by the kohen. So kohen here, instead of putting on the mizbeach, ate them. Now if he ate chelev, you'd be speaking about a chiyuv karet. So it's unlikely that we're speaking about the chalavim or the kor chalavim that go on the mizbeach. We're speaking about the klayot or the yoteret hakaved, which are the other parts of the fats that go on the mizbeach that are not classified necessarily as chelev. There's no chiyuv karet. And you can see that in the Rashi in the Ktav Yad, where he says, "Mina imurim klayot v'yoteret hakaved." Question is, if he eats it instead of it going on the mizbeach, what has he violated? So he says, "Kohen shechal mina imurim mahu lav dezarut lo kami baile." Fact that he violates the lav of zarut, I don't have any question about. Ki kami baile lav de kalil tiyeh. My question is, what is in violation of kalil tiyeh? My, what's the din? So I'm Rav Aaron, the Ravina. So Aaron says to Ravina, Tashma, Titania, we have a brayta. Velezo omer, koshu bikalil tiyeh, lotein lotase al achilato. That the fact that the pasuk juxtaposes is kalil tiyeh to lotei achel tells you anytime there's a requirement of kalil tiyeh in the mikdash, there's also a restriction of lotei achel. It's a broader statement about kalil tiyeh that it always encompasses or incorporates lotei achel. Now, with regards to our case of a kohen who's eating the emurim, the first thing is that he is in violation of a lav of zar. Now that is a machloket Rashi and the Balei Tosafot as to which lav you violated. According to Rashi, you violated the lav that's found in Parshat Emor, Berachavet Pasuk Yud, V'chol zar lo yochal kodesh. Toshav kohen v'sachir lo yochal kodesh. So v'chol zar lo yochal kodesh, over here was the restriction for the kohen as well. Because as far as the emurim are concerned, he's a zar. They don't belong to him. They belong on the mizbeach. And therefore, the chol zar lo yochal kodesh is the source for that. The Balei Tosafot don't love that because that is, according to the Gemara, said about truma and not about kodoshim. So why you bring me a pasuk about a zar eating truma when we're dealing with a zar that's eating something that is kodesh? Therefore, they favor the pasuk that's found in the miluim in Shmot. It says in Perachavtet, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, V'achlu otam asher kupar behem, L'malei et yadam l'kadesh otam, V'zar lo yochal ki kodesh heim. There you have, V'zar lo yochal ki kodesh heim. They are kodesh, the zar shouldn't partake of it. And that's the source according to the Balei Tosafot. Now the Balei Tosafot could then go back to try to defend Rashi's position about kozar lo yochal kodesh. Even though it's speaking about truma, we know that there is a hekesh, or even a gzeres shava, between mi'ilah and truma. And maybe therefore, since you have a lav that's found by truma, it also has application by mi'ilah, or application by hekesh. So that's how he tries to defend Rashi's position over here, but then runs into other problems, which leads him to believe that the source of the pasuk is the one that we just quoted from the miluim, rather than Rashi's source for the pasuk, even though his source also might have problems from other places in Shas. So that is what Ravina states as a given, that he's definitely a zar, because he's a zar vis-a-vis the emurim of the mizbeach, and he is in violation of being a zar. Question is he in violation of kalil tiyeh? What is the din? And that's what we brought the breita that says that anything that has a requirement of kalil tiyeh also has a restriction of lo teachel. And given that, there would also be a violation of lo teachel. Kalil tiyeh is a positive commandment. You can have an iser aseh that derives from it, but you're not going to have a lav that includes malkot. Lo teachel is a lo taseh. And if you violate that, you will get malkot for it. So What we're suggesting over here is that the Kalil Tiyeh and Lo Teachel is a package, and given that, if there is a requirement of Kalil Tiyeh by the Emurim, then there also will be a restriction of Lo Teachel for the Kohen, who is a Zar, vis-a-vis the Chalavim that are supposed to go on the Mizbeach, and therefore it will be in violation of both Zarut as well as Lo Teachel. The Pashtut of Gemara is that what Ravina is saying is that regards to the labd of Zarut, you would get Malkot for Zar eating a Murim, and that's Pshit Olay, and that's the way that Rashi reads it. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot, in explaining Rashi's view, as we noted, mentioned that the Pasuk is correlated with Mi'ilah and not necessarily with Zarut, and therefore you would get Malkot for Mi'ilah and not for Zarut, according to that view of the Balei Tosafot. And therefore the standing here would be that you don't get Malkot for Zarut. And that seems to be actually the view of the Rambam, who does not bring down the halacha that there's any Malkot here for Zarut. The Rashi over here says that the question revolves around a Zevach of a Kohen, which means that a Kohen ate from the Emurim of another Kohen, implying that this din is only applicable to the Zvachim and Minachot of a Kohen. Although the Pashtut of Gemara is that this has nothing to do with the Zevach of a Kohen, but the fact that it is something that goes on the Mizbeach and not to the Kohen, and should be equally applicable to the Zevach of Israel as it is to a Zevach of a Kohen. Right now we move on to the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah says, Minchat Kohenim, Uminchat Kohen Mashiach, Uminchat Nisachim LaMizbeach, Ve'ein Bahem LaKohenim. These three items go entirely on the Mizbeach, and the Kohenim get absolutely nothing from this. So that's Minchat Kohenim, which we know is Kalil. You have Minchat Kohen Mashiach, which is the Kohen Minchat Chavitin, which you also know is Kalil Taktar. And Minchat Nisachim, which are also Kulo the Mizbeach. That's based on the Sukkim in Parshat Shlach, that the Nisachim and the Minchat Nisachim go on Mizbeach entirely. So then the Kohenim have no rights and no portion in these Minachot. And these three instances, the Mizbeach has the upper hand over the Kohanim. It gets to eat everything, and the Kohanim get absolutely nothing. Shtei Lechem, the Lechem Apanim, because the Shtei Lechem of Shavuot, and the Lechem Apanim that's put on the Shulchan every Shabbat, Nechalim the Kohanim. Those are exclusively eaten by the Kohanim, Ve'im Ba'em the Mizbeach. And none of them ends up on the Mizbeach. Now the truth is that the Kivsei Atzeret and the Vazichei Levona from the Lechem HaPanim do end up on the Mizbeach, but they're not inherently this item. The item itself has nothing that goes on the Mizbeach, and the Kohanim have the right or entitled to eat the entirety of these items, the Shtei Lechem and the Lechem HaPanim. In these instances, the Kohanim have the upper hand versus the Mizbeach, that they get the entirety of this item and nothing goes to the Mizbeach. The Tulaka, are there no more items where the Mizbeach gets everything? Vayikola. What about the fact that an olah is kalil on the Mizbeach? That's the whole idea of an olah. That entire korban goes on the Mizbeach. So why over there do you not say that that's another instance where the Mizbeach gets everything? Gemara says, Ika ora the Kohanim. Gemara gives a more fundamental answer. Your answer is just, topically, it's not relevant. The Mishnah is speaking about things that are true of Menachot and things that are relevant to Menachot. The Gemara says that that's not a strong enough reason to say it was left out. There's a fundamental reason it was left out is because the hides go to the Kohanim. Even in the Olot, there's a portion that does go to the Kohen. Vaika Olatov. What about Olatov, which goes entirely on the Mizbeach, and the Kohanim get absolutely nothing from the Olatov? So Ika Mora'ah Benotzah. You do have the waste of the Mora'ah Benotzah that doesn't go to the Mizbeach, but goes to the Makom Adeshen. It's an interesting reason to leave it out, but the Gemara here indicates through that what they're looking for is an item whose entirety goes to the Mizbeach. Even though the Kohanim may not get anything from it, if some part of it does not end up on the Mizbeach, that's also not considered to be entirely to the Mizbeach versus the Kohanim. It has to be that the entirety of the item goes to the Mizbeach, and the Kohanim don't get any portion of it. Those are the instances we're trying to highlight in the Mishnah. Vayika Nisachim. What about the libations that go on the Mizbeach? Wine libations go entirely on the Mizbeach. Lishitin, Nazle. They don't go on the Mizbeach. They get poured down the piping that takes them down to the depths that are below the Mizbeach, the Tahom that exists below the Mizbeach. Tosua does point out that there is another item that goes kulo al Mizbeach, and the Kohanim get nothing from, and that's Livona. Frankincense that's brought. Tosfos in the end says that that's not so relevant because it's not ra'ui la'achila. It couldn't be eaten because it's not an edible substance. That's not a unique concept that the Mishnah would mention, that the Kohanim get none of it and the Mizbeach gets all of it, because there's no way for the Kohanim to eat it anyway, something that inherently is inedible. And that's why the Gemara and the Mishnah don't discuss the issue of Levonah. By Bezol, what does it mean that Bezol, in these instances it's true that the Mizbeach has the upper hand over the Kohanim, but in other instances not. What does that come to exclude? Lafuke mid Shmuel comes to exclude the position of Shmuel, Damar Shmuel, someone who donates wine to the Mikdash, or yayin for the Nesech in the Mikdash, you sprinkle that wine onto the pyre. The Gemara in Zvachim, when we brought this on Sadi Aleph and Medbet, that sugya is one of the main sugyas about psik reshe, dover sheinu mitkavein, and psik reshe delo nechale. Over there, the Gemara discusses the fact that when you sprinkle on the maracha, it extinguishes the fire of the maracha. And you're not allowed to do that. It says, Esha Mizbeach, Tukad Bolo, Tichbe. You're not allowed to blow out. You're not allowed to extinguish the maracha of the Mizbeach. You sprinkle wine on it, you're going to cause some sort of diminishment, extinguishment of that pyre. So then how can you sprinkle it on the pyre? So Gemara there gives an answer, because you could sprinkle it on there without it extinguishing anything. You could do it in such a way that it doesn't affect the pyre. So from there you learn, psik reshe is only when something is absolutely certain or 100% it will be the outcome of this action. If there is any way to do this without violating the iser of lo tichbeh, then that would not be considered a psik reshe. The fact that you could sprinkle it out in small amounts and it wouldn't affect the fire at all, it wouldn't be mechabeh the fire, that means that it's not considered to be a psik reshe, and you can do it, you can put it onto the pyre. So now, he says you put it on the ishim. So here would be a nesek that's not getting poured down to the shitin, rather it's getting sprinkled on the mizbeach. And that would be something that's entirely on the mizbeach, and nothing to the kohanim. Kamash malan, to the shitin azle. So that's what the Gemara says. The Mishnah is coming to tell you that it doesn't hold like Shmuel. It doesn't think that when you get yayin, you put it on the mizbeach. It thinks you put it down the piping to the shitin, and not being placed on the mizbeach. Because it was placed on the mizbeach, the Mishnah should have enumerated that amongst the items that go to the mizbeach and not the kohanim. The fact that it didn't, and then use an exclusionary term of bezeh in our Mishnah, or bezu in the Gemara, that says that only these and not other items. The Gemara says the second half of the Mishnah, shteh lechem lechem apanim, go entirely to the kohanim and nothing to the mizbeach, v'tuleka. There aren't any other instances of that. Vayika chatat of. Chatat of is nothing of the chatat of goes on the mizbeach. Kohanim get to eat the chatat of. Ika dama. The dam of the chatat of does end up on the mizbeach. There's a portion of it that does go to the mizbeach. Vayika log shemen shel mitzorah. What about the log shemen that the mitzorah brings in his process of tahara? There also, the residual is eaten entirely by the kohanim. Where it says, ika matnotav. You have the matnot of the log shemen. The log shemen has actually a number of matanot. One set of matanot, which Rashi says is the behonot, is the placement on the thumb, the big toe, and the ear of the mitzorah as part of his tahara. So that would be one way to explain matnotav. The Shita Mikuvetzet points out in Obet, what is the ipoy of the mizbeach in this case? But if we take what Chazal said before with regards to the oath, it's the fact that not all of it goes to that particular individual, which is also important to the Mishnah. It's not the fact that the Mizbeach or the Kohen also got something, but rather it's that the Kohen or the Mizbeach didn't get everything that was possible over here. And once again, you'd have to say the same thing by the Shemen, that not everything went to the Kohen, because some of it was used in the Avodah or the processing of the Mitzorah. So over here, even though the residual goes to the Kohen, there are matnot that are given before that don't go to him, which are not being put on the Mizbeach, but they're also not being given to the Kohen. And as you saw before, when the Mishnah says that, it means exclusively to that individual, nothing goes anywhere else. The other possibility, the Matnot, or Rashi in the Ktav Yad writes, that Matnot ala parochet, tichtiv yizamin Hashem in vetzbo, sheva pamim lifnei Hashem. So he brings the other alternative about the Matnot are, the Bali Tosafot tried to deal with that explanation of Rashi, that actually went on the parochet, because from the parshiyah that deals with Terata Matzara, it doesn't sound like the Kohen is standing inside the Heichal. It sounds like he's standing in the Azarah near Shar Nikonor where the Mitzorah is, and he's sprinkling towards the Heichal, not necessarily directly on the Parochet being internal to the Heichal. So those matnot make it that the Kohen doesn't end up with everything. Umay bazu. So then what is the bezeh in the letter of the Mishnah? Who does that come to exclude? So it comes to exclude the opinion that the shtei lechem that come by themselves go to the sreifa. That the Kohanim always have the upper hand when it comes to the shtei lechem. Now first of all, in terms of what it means here that you have to do sreifa, it's not clear whether the sreifa over here means straight out sreifa, or it means to bar tzuratan, that first of all they have to be left, and then afterwards be nisraf. Rashi over here brings three different possibilities as to how the shtei lechem are coming by themselves, that they possibly would be nisraf. And that is, the first one is, sheet nadev, shtei lechem. He donates shtei lechem to the mikdash, below shnei kvasim, without shnei kvasim, and therefore that's why it would go the sreifa. That's a very difficult reason, as the Tzon Kodeshim points out, that there is no such thing as a nedava of the shtei lechem. Whether that's be yachid or be tzibur, they don't come as a nedava. There's only one obligatory offering that comes from them. Inyan acher, shtei lechem abot bifnei atzman kagon shlo ayu kvasim shenevdu. It's a case where there are no kivsei atzeret because they got lost, and therefore the shtei lechem are going to go l'sreifa. Or inyan acher, afuke mimadam or midi Rabbi Akiva. It's kind of to exclude the position of Rabbi Akiva, who says that the lechem is independent of the kvasim, to the point that you could bring the lechem even without the kvasim. And so kamash malan, that over here, the kohanim have the upper hand always, and they are always the ones who eat the shtei lechem, which means that we are not soreif the shtei lechem. You only bring the shtei lechem when the kohanim eat it. And again here, you could read that in one of two ways. Could you read it that the b'shtei lechem, it always goes to the Kohanim, even in these instances? Or, you could possibly argue that kamash man is that in a situation where the shtei lechem don't go to the Kohen, you're not allowed to bring them. Because shtei lechem only go to Kohanim. And if you're going to create a situation in which they don't go to the Kohanim, then the shtei lechem are not relevant as a korban in that instance. Misayle the Shmuel, it also supports another member of Shmuel, Dama Shmuel, Amit Nadev Shemen Komso, Visheirav Neachalim. If you donate shemen to the mikdash, you take off a kometz from it, and the residual is eaten by the kohanim. That kometz goes on the mizbeach, and the residual is eaten. So this is not an item that belongs to the mizbeach entirely. It's shared between them. As opposed to a view that could have said that the entire shemen goes on the mizbeach, and that again is precluded by our Mishnah, because our Mishnah does not enumerate this amongst the items that goes to the mizbeach and not to the kohanim. And as the Rashi in the Ketav Yad and the Balei Tosfot note, that the reason you do this by shemen and not by yayin, according to Shmuel, is because shemen has enough viscosity where the concept of kmitza is relevant, and therefore you can take off a kometz. Yayin, which is totally liquidy, you can't do a kometz from the yayin, and therefore you have to come up with another solution, and that's what Shmuel said before, that you mzalfin al ishin, you sprinkle it on the fire, which according to our Mishnah is rejected because they think that the way to put the yayin on mizbeach is derech the nikavim, the pipings on the southwestern corner that allow the wine to go down beneath the mizbeach into the shittin, either deep into the shittin or from the shittin out to the amatamayim that is in the mikdash. Okay, next Mishnah, we're actually getting now to the core of making the menachot. And this is the start of the Mishnayot to describe the actual making of the menachot. Kol ha-menachot zanasot b'kli sharet. Rashi says, kagon minchat machavat u'marcheshet. Question is, does Rashi mean just the minchat machavat u'marcheshet? Or similar to a machavat u'marcheshet, because they are the source for this halacha, but it also will apply to the minchat solet. Kol ha-menachot anasot b'kli, to note, shlosha matanot shemen. Any mincha that's made in a utensil requires three portions of shemen that are associated with them. They're actually written in reverse order. Yitzika, ublila, umatan shemen bikli, kodem lasiatan. So working backwards, you first have the oil, the pan, or the kli that you're going to put them in. That is the matan shemen bikli, kodem lasiatan. After you then put in the flour with the oil that's already in the pan, you add more oil, levlo, to mix it, to knead it together with the oil. After it's already now made into a dough, then you pour, yitzikah, you pour oil on top of it. So those are the three different matnot shemen that take place with the menachot. The Rashi on the Mishnah just explains that haki mashu matnitim b'shesho se yitzikah, tzarek sehe ablila nasa kevar. And before you do the blila, you have to make sure that the manchan shemen b'kli was already done. That's how he explains the reason for the order of the Mishnah being backwards. Although, you could simply explain, as we're going to see in the Gemara, the limud from the psukim comes in that order, which is that you have yitzikah b'lila, and then matan b'kli, in terms of the order of the psukim in Perek Bet and Parshat Vayikra. Chalot bololan divrei rabbi. V'chachamim omrim solet. The question is, at what stage you do the blila? So the Chamim's position is like solet. When it's still flour, you put in the oil, and you mix them together, you do the blila. Then Rabbi believes, chalot bololam. Only after they are baked, do you do the blila, do you mix the breads with the oil itself and do the blila, after they're already made into breads. So the simplest way to read this is that Rabbi's position is dealing just with the chalot, the me'afeh tanur, and that's what the Rabbeinu Gershom says, that the chalot shel mincha me'afeh bololam b'shemen. But if you look in the Rashi, in the Ketav Yad, he says, v'chalot bololam, the minchat machavat v'marcheshet, that it's not referencing to mafet tanur, but rather to the machvat and marcheshet, that after you bake them, you do the blila b'shemen, not before the baking. And the Rashi that we have in the Gemara above brings all three of them. Chalot shel mincha me'afeh, v'shel machvat u'marcheshet b'lulam b'shemen. So here you have three different views as to what Rabbi is referencing to when he says chalot bolulam b'shemen. And that might relate to the girsa of the Mishnah. You can see in the Shittim Mekubetzet, that in Old Gimel he says that the word should be v'hachalot. So that might be connecting it back to the minchat marcheshet and machavat that were spoken about in the first part of the Mishnah. Whereas if you leave out the vav and say chalot, it might be a new section of the Mishnah and then only referencing to mafet tanur and not to the machavat and marcheshet. Achalot, tumunot blila, urikikim mishicha. The chalot and rikikim are the two different possibilities of a mafet tanur. Both the chalot and the rikikim of the mafet tanur do not require yitzikat shemen. The chalot require blila. According to the Rabbana, that means blila, mixing the oil with the solet. And for Rabbi, it means mixing the oil with the baked chalot. And then the rikikim require a mishicha. They require an anointing. It's the only korban mincha that requires such an anointing. The Mishnah describes now, ketzad moshchan. How do you do this mishicha? Kamin kai, rasher nechalim, the kohanim. And the residual is eaten by the kohanim. Meaning that whatever you don't use of the oil for the mincha, the residual of that oil goes to the kohanim. I'm going to defer discussing what the min kai is, how you anoint it, because we're going to discuss that in tomorrow's daf. The me'ute mai. What does this come to exclude? Amra papa, the me'ute minchat me'afeh. Comes to exclude the minchat me'afeh that does not have this requirement of kol minachot nasu pekli, shlosha matanot. That any mincha that has a kli will require three matanot. And therefore the minchat me'afeh doesn't end up with a kli, doesn't have the requirements of all three matanot. So what we're saying here is that the minchat me'afeh never ends up in a kli. As Tosfot says, it's not considered to be done b'kli, because lo mikre nasib b'kli, kasavar ein atanur mekadesh. If you look in the Rashi in the Ketav Yad, he says, what's being excluded here is the yitzika. It does have the other two matnot, which is the matnat kli and the blila, but it does not have the yitzika. And Rashi on the Mishnah says something similar, which is la fuke mafeh, te'in kol maseh b'kli, shari nefet b'tanur, she'in tuna yitzika, aval idak bet matanot tzricha. Although it's possible that you could read this to say that it was excluded from everything except the blila. That's what Mishnah Mela claims is the view of the Rambam. And that might also be bolstered by this idea that the Tosfot points out that there is no kli for the mafet tanur. And if there's no kli kodesh, then it makes sense that maybe you don't need a matan shemen in the kli beforehand. Tan Rabbanan. So now we're going to read the psukim by the minchat nedavot. It says here, Ve'im minchat marcheshet korbanecha, solet b'shemen te'aseh. So solet b'shemen te'aseh makes it sound like, lo'im shetunim matan shemen b'kli. That teaches you that you need a matan shemen in the kli itself. Because the way the pasuk reads is, solet bashemen taseh. The solet is placed into the shemen, which means the shemen's already there. The shemen's already oiled the pan or the kli beforehand. Korbanecha, the fact that it uses the word korbanecha, is a gzereshava. Korbanecha, korbanecha, ligzereshava. Makan matan shemen bikli. Afalan matan shemen bikli. Just like over here, which we just learned from the pasuk, there is a requirement of matan shemen bikli. So too, by the minchat machavat, there is also a requirement of matan shemen bikli. Because in the pasuk, by the minchat machavat, it says, bein minchat al machavat, but by the minchat machavat, it says, solet blula bashemen. That the solet is mixed together with the shemen, that's blila. So that's what the Gemara says here. Makan matan shemen kli, avlalan matan shemen kli. Just like by the minchat marcheshet, you require oiling of the kli first, so too by the minchat machavat, you have the same requirement. Umalalan yitzika ublila. By the korban machavat, we read the pasuk already that tells us about blula bashemen. The subsequent pasuk says, patota ta pitim, v'yatzakta le shemen minchahi. There's a requirement for yitzika of the shemen on the mincha machavat. Now again, the tzika the shemen is done after you already had done the afiyah, after already it's baked. Then your patoto tap tzitim, you break it down into smaller pieces. How small? Machloket rishonim. And then you do yitzika, you do the pouring of the oil onto that mafet. So therefore, the machavat has both blula b'shemen and yitzika b'shemen. The marcheshet has neither of those, but has a requirement that the oil be in the pan first. So the gzer sheva, korbanecha between them teaches you that whatever is applicable by the minchat marcheshet is applicable by machavat, and vice versa. Whatever is applicable by machavat is applicable by the marcheshet. So just like by marcheshet you need matan shem b'kli, so too by the machavat. And just like by the machavat where you require blila and yitzika, so too by the marcheshet you require blila and yitzika, and that comes from the gzer sheva, korbanecha, korbanecha. The way that you would do this is you'd take the pan and oil up the pan. Then you put the solet into the pan. Pour oil and poshrim, warm water. That's mentioned in the Rashi and the Ktav Yad over here. You also add in warm water then. And then you knead the flour with the shemen and the warm water. And then after that you bake it. And then you put out the top titim, you break it down into smaller pieces. And then once you broke it down into smaller pieces, you then do the yitzika, you anoint it with oil on top of that. Whatever oil you don't use up, that shirayim is eaten by the kohanim. Tosfot over here asks, why do you need the gzera shava at all? Because he says, the fact that the word mincha appears by these items, we would have known the din, irrespective of the gzera shava. So he says, v'nira lefaresh, the gabei shloshet matnot shemen, without any gzera shava, the three different matnot of shemen would have been spread to all of the menachot and would have been required in all the menachot and wouldn't even need a gzera shava. Misvara ba'alma. Just logically, that these require matnot shemen, they're all menachot, they should all have the same din. And so therefore you would extrapolate the dinim from machavat to macheshet to all the other menachot. And you wouldn't need a gzera shava for that. And it is a ke'ein giloi milta bi'alma. It's simply a giloi milta that this is what needs to be done with a mincha. Each one of them gives you a piece of the puzzle. And once you have all the pieces of the puzzle, you can have a bigger picture. And that seemingly is the view of Rashi as well, because both on the Rashi on the previous amud and the Rashi on this amud, when it tells us the din from machavat to marcheshet, Rashi says, hu adin the machavat ulishar minachot. And then over there by the machavat, he says, hu adin lishar minachot. This is not just an application between machavat and marcheshet, but has broader application to all the menachot. But then, what do you need the gzeres shava? V'ada tzarich ocho korbanecha the gzeres shava. The reason you need the korbanecha to have a gzeres shava is mishum dekeven debe machavat k'tiv yitzika achrona uber marcheshet k'tiv matan shemen bikli bitzchila. Since the matan shemen of the machavat is always at the end in the yitzika. And that of the minchat barchesh is always in the beginning, in the kli, you would have thought, hani mile, shizodina bakach. You might have thought that that is the process for that mincha. That's what's unique about that mincha. Once it teaches us that you have to put the gzer shava one on the other, Then that will become true of all the menachot once we've established that they're not a distinction in the way that you make the mincha, but rather they are true of all the menachot. Then we spread that or extrapolate that to all the menachot, with the exception of the mafet tanur, because it has a miyut, which we'll discuss tomorrow, that there's a miyut with regards to the yitzika, that there is no yitzika by the minchat mafet tanur, but that's because it specifically states that there is no yitzika, or we have a miyut that tells you there's no yitzika over there. But otherwise, anything we know about one mincha, it's going to be true of the other minachot. And the only reason we needed the gzer shava is to take away this possibility that this is a unique aspect of this korban. Once we know that it's not that case, then we extrapolate all these dinim to all the menachot. So at Giloy Milta, this is the way to process a mincha. And the Shita Mikubetz in Erud Aleph explains that that works through a memetzinu, because in any one of the menachot that requires shemen, there's at least one of the matnot shemen that's mentioned, whether it's yitzika, blila, umatan, bikli. And then through a memetzinu, we'll create it that all menachot therefore have the same matnot shemen, all three of the matnot shemen. And the Gzer Shava is Migaleh, that these aren't particular to the Menachot, but rather that you should learn them B'mei Metzino, and it's a Giloy Milta to teach us that you should learn through this vehicle of Me Metzino. Okay, I'm going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Ayin Hei, Amud Aleph.